The label says product of the USA, but the rules say it really does not need be. The rules say it could be product of China and still be labeled product of the USA. This leads us to ask, how much truth is in the advertising of food?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1257th edition of the Food Chain Radio program. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Puerto Madryn who are tuned into the podcast of the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, the label can lie, and can do so with the blessings of the United States Department of Agriculture. The label on the beef steaks can say, product of the USA, but in fact, the steaks contained in the package can really be the product of anywhere in the world. New Mexico rancher Michael Lucero and consumer Robin Thornton took exception to this quirky ruling and filed a lawsuit in federal court in New Mexico, alleging the nation's big four beef packers had violated New Mexico's Unfair Practices Act. But the federal court claims that the feds are in charge of labeling and advertising food. But RCAF USA and Public Justice have objected to this ruling. Leads us to ask, how much truth is in the advertising of food? Well, who better to ask than Bill Bullard, who is the CEO of RCAF USA. Bill, welcome back to the Food Chain.
Well, glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, when we last talked, way back in 2017, we talked about the competitive position of Montana beef in the world market. And we talked about how there was a lot of demand for that beef throughout the world. Well, we're now in the COVID year of 2020. How is the market for Montana beef doing?
Well, the market for beef has been extremely strong. Beef retail prices are at all-time record highs or near record highs and have been for several months. Meanwhile, however, while consumers are paying these record prices for beef, the prices that America's cattle producers, including those in Montana, are receiving are seriously depressed. They're at decade-long lows. So the marketplace is broken. You have consumers paying very high prices for beef. You have cattle producers receiving very low prices for their cattle. That requires some immediate action on the part of policymakers, and yet they fail to do so. So the problem continues. Beef prices continue their upward trend. Cattle prices continue their downward trend, and farmers and ranchers that raise cattle are suffering as a result.
Well, it would seem like there's a middleman in that equation somewhere, whereas the consumers are paying much more, the producers are getting much less, somebody's making money there. Who is it?
Well, and that's exactly right. And so that is what prompted us to file an antitrust lawsuit against the largest four meat packers, alleging that they have conspired to artificially depress cattle prices paid to producers while consumers were continuing to pay these record prices. And so that's where we targeted the problem and have initiated a potential solution to solve that problem. We've also gone to Congress and the administration asking them to take reform measures to restore competition to the marketplace so that a competitive market can properly allocate the competitive share of everyone along the supply chain, and that is the competitive share of the consumer's beef dollar. Right now, the producers are getting an extremely small share. Meat packers and retailers are enjoying relatively high shares, and that's contrary to what a competitive market would dictate.
What share do those big four meat packers have of the meat of the beef industry, Bill?
Well, if we go back about 15, 20 years ago, the cattle producer was receiving about 60 cents for every dollar consumers spent on beef. Right now, we're at historic lows. The cattle producer is only receiving somewhere above 30% and below 35%. That means somebody within this multi-segmented beef supply chain is capturing the competitive share that should be going to the producers. And that additional share captured by the packers and retailers, you know, now upwards of 70% or 70 cents for every dollar, has been taken away from the producers.
Now, it would seem that those in the middle have gained some kind of power to be able to take such a big share of the pie without giving the beef producers, the ranchers, the cattlemen, the cattlewomen, their traditional share. So it would seem like they must have developed a monopoly of sorts.
Well, in fact, in the cattle industry, we have the most concentrated market structure of any segment of our economy. We have just four packers controlling 85% of all the fed cattle market. And this level of concentration is twice the level necessary to identify, from economic terms, an oligopoly, where you have just a few players in the marketplace. So we have four packers buying 85% of the cattle produced by about 750,000 cattle producers who are disaggregated all across the United States. That level of concentration far exceeds levels, you know, known to elicit poor economic performance and anti-competitive practices. So we are facing an oligopoly within the industry, and yet decision makers have done nothing to address this. Right now, however, we've never seen the scrutiny that's being focused on our industry, and particularly on our industry's weak market structure than what we have right now. All the levels of government have called for investigations into the meatpacker buying practices. So the first step in solving the problem is identifying the problem. And finally, we believe the problem is being identified by decision makers in Washington.
But given the concentration and the economic firepower and the record profits being generated by those four, you know, Bill, it used to be that cattle ranchers had problems with cattle rustlers. And, you know, you had to deal with cattle rustlers out there stealing your cows. But it seems like to me the big cattle rustlers now are those big four meat packers that control so much of the market. And with that concentration, their pockets are loaded with money. And so, you know, they're going to Washington, D.C., and spending that money on buying politicians. Or am I wrong?
Well, you know, that's a suspicion that we have. But what we do know is that the marketplace, the power disparity is as great or greater now than it's ever been. And that is, you have these independent farmers and ranchers producing cattle of the highest quality, and now they're marketing into this highly concentrated marketing sector that they have no control over and little to no bargaining power. And so we're seeing the results. We're seeing the results with these severely depressed cattle prices and a relatively high, historically high beef prices, that consumers continue to demonstrate a strong willingness to pay. And so we have to rebalance the inequity within the entire beef supply chain. And the cattle industry is the largest segment of American agriculture, and consumers are paying a sufficient price for beef today in order to make every segment of this beef supply chain profitable. But as you've described, these profits are being captured along the downstream segments of the supply chain, and both producers on the beginning of the supply chain and consumers on the end are being exploited today.
And take us back to RCAF USA, because we know that it's a Montana-sized acronym for something. For what?
Right. It's the Ranchers Cattlemen Action Legal Fund, United Stock Growers of America. We were formed 20 years ago to begin the necessary process of reforming the broken market structure in our industry so that independent producers could continue to receive profits from a competitive marketplace and not have to rely on government price supports. So during this COVID pandemic, for example, the government has been paying cattle producers for losses as a result of the broken marketplace. However, the marketplace is sufficient in terms of profit generation to provide producers all that they need to be profitable. The problem is the market's broken. And so Congress should never have had to provide any cattle producers with money because the consumers are paying a sufficient price for beef to keep everyone whole along the supply chain. What Congress should be doing instead of doling out cash is they should be making major structural reforms to the marketplace so cattle producers can once again derive their competitive share of that beef dollar and continue to operate their operations profitably. It's not happening today.
Well, how did those four producers become the four producers that own 85% of the marketplace? They must have had some kind of protection to allow them to grow to the extent that they've grown.
Right. And rather than receiving protections, they've received leniency on the part of our regulators to enforce our antitrust laws, the Sherman Act, the Clayton Act, and even the Packers and Stockyards Act, that was intended to preserve and protect a competitive marketplace for independent livestock producers. But those laws have gathered dust on the shelves for decades, and they have not been enforced. And so through the period of the 1980s, even the U.S. Department of Agriculture characterized the industry as merger mania, because that's when the packers started the process of capturing an ever greater share of that marketplace. And by the end of the 80s and into the early 90s, they've reached this unprecedented level of upwards of 80%, and now they're at 85%. And so this has been a lack of government action to enforce the laws that are already on the books. And it's gotten so bad that it's now become the norm. And so now it's going to take more aggressive legislation in order to force the reforms upon the industry that are necessary to preserve the equities for consumers of beef as well as for the producers of cattle.
Well, when we get back from this break, that's what we'll pick up: aggressive legislation and how we can affect that aggressive legislation. We are with Bill Bullard, who is the CEO of RCAF USA. And by the way, we're going to have to find out who RCAF USA really represents, because I'm thinking it's not those big four meat packers. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. We're talking about advertising and concentration right back.
Duke the Pug will soon turn 20, which is pretty good for a dog breed that averages 11 years. When Duke was 13, he lost a lot of hair, had a hard time getting up for a walk, and his bowel movements were not very moving. We started making his food instead of buying it. We cook up a big batch of rice, chicken, broccoli, carrots, and turmeric, freeze meal-sized batches, and thaw them at mealtime. We also sprinkle Arthrodex on each meal. Arthrodex is a complete blend of plant-derived minerals, vitamins, amino acids, and enzymes formulated to make old dogs young again. And it does. Duke the Pug does have his problems, but he has all his hair, loves daily walks, and has no problems with his movements. Breakfast is at 7, and if it's not there by 7:01, we all hear about it. Make your old dog young again. Pick up Arthrodex at NutriensToGo.com. And while you're at it, make yourself young again with a Healthy Body Start Pack. NutriensToGo.com. NutriensToGo.com.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, four beef packers own 85% of the beef market. So 85 out of 100 hamburgers that you eat from the fast food place comes from one of the big four meat packers in the United States. That's a tremendous concentration of power. It's also a tremendous concentration of money. And so most of the, $66 billion beef industry is going right to these four big companies, and that's a lot of money to be concentrated in a few places. So that money's not going to the people that RCAP USA represents. Who is that, Bill? Who are the people that you represent?
Well, we represent the actual farmers and ranchers who raise and sell cattle. So we represent the hardworking American rancher that's out there caring for their animals through all kinds of weather anomalies. We have about 5,600 members in 44 states, and we are the largest producer-only National Cattle Association representing the economic interests of cattle producers. So we represent the people that you see on the highway when you're going down the road, the pasture lands and the cattle and the farmhouses and ranch houses. Those are the people that we represent. We don't represent, as you indicated, the multinational meat packers who are tremendously powerful, both in terms of economic power and political power.
And one of the ways those four meat packers have been using their concentration of power is by shifting the labeling of beef, as I understand it, vis-a-vis the World Trade Organization. We no longer know where our beef comes from. We no longer have that mandatory country of origin labeling that says, hey, I'm buying some of RCAF USA's farmers and ranchers' beef. It could come from anywhere in the world, and it could say, product of the USA. How do you deal with that, Bill?
That's right. Well, if we go back in history, so the Tariff Act of 1930 was passed, requiring all imported goods to be labeled to the consumer. And then we go to 1989, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture wrote rules to implement the Federal Meat Inspection Act. And in those rules, they ignored the requirement of the Tariff Act of 1930 and said that once the product comes through U.S. Customs and Border Protection, it's deemed to be a domestic product and treated as such. So USDA's policy is to allow imported beef from Uruguay, Nicaragua, Honduras, Mexico, Canada, or any of the 20 countries we import from, that beef can be imported into the United States. And then all it has to do is go through a U.S. processing plant or a U.S. meat packer, and they can take the foreign label off the meat and replace it with a label that says product of the USA. And that's sanctioned by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. They've approved it. And we have been fighting for 20 years to reverse the mislabeling of U.S. beef. And for a while there, we won. From beginning in 2002, Congress passed the mandatory country of origin labeling bill. And that bill required these imported products to be labeled through retail sale, meaning all the way to the consumer. So we superseded that bad rule that USDA wrote in 1989. But then in 2015, in their infinite wisdom, Congress repealed country of origin labeling for beef and pork. And so the USDA then reverted back to the 1989 foreign products rule that allowed them to treat that imported product as if it were domestic and allowed them to put a USA label on products that could be exclusively born, raised, and harvested in a foreign country. And so consumers are being terribly misled right now as a result of that policy. We filed a lawsuit in 2017 and said that when COOL was repealed and the government reverted back to the bad rule, the clock should be reset in terms of the requirement that you have to litigate within so many years, the statute of limitations. But the court said, no, the statute of limitations ran out on the 1989 rules 6 years after that, and the repeal of COOL did not re-trigger the time clock. And so we were unable to resolve the problem through that case. Importantly, however, the court recognized that cattle producers were harmed when the repeal of country of origin labeling occurred, because at that point, packers could use imported product in order to lessen demand for the cattle produced by our members. So this is an extremely important issue for us.
So this would seem to give tremendous amount of power to the meat packers and take away a lot of power from the meat producers. Because if the consumer does not know where their beef comes from, then beef is just beef. It's a commodity. But if they want beef that was raised on the prairies of Montana, they'll never know unless they can find some way of buying it directly from the source. Am I wrong?
Well, and you're right. And that's why we have to change the underlying law that is creating this mislabeling of USA, exclusively USA produced beef. The problem we have is this very powerful meatpacking lobby led by the National Cattlemen's Beef Association that everyone believes must be representing the hardworking farmers and ranchers of this country. But their position is just what you said. Beef is beef. Doesn't matter if the animal was born and raised in Montana, Mexico, or Canada. Beef is beef. And that is that's contrary to what the American consumers want. 2013, Consumers Federation of America did a survey, found that 90% of consumers want to know where their beef comes from. In 2016, Consumer Reports issued a survey result, and that said that 93% of consumers wanted to know if their beef was being produced in a foreign country. And so you have the largest organization purporting to represent cattle producers saying that consumers don't care where the beef comes from, and yet you have evidence demonstrating that consumers, in fact, do. And so that's the problem. We go to Washington, and Washington says, well, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association is the largest association representing cattle producers. But in fact, and what Congress doesn't know, is that they also represent the four multinational meat packers that profit greatly from being able to place a product of USA label on a product that is exclusively produced in a foreign country. Just plain wrong, but that's the world we live in today.
So it seems to be, to me, like we have a David and Goliath fight going on here between the cattle producers, those men and women out there on the horses, and the giant meat packers, which are the ones that are collecting 85% of the money or something like that. And who are in Washington, D.C., wining and dining politicians. So my goodness, Bill Bullard, how do you win that fight?
Well, you win it by having some faith in the system. We have the best government when compared to all others with all its flaws. So we have to figure out how to convince Congress to reintroduce legislation to fully restore mandatory country of origin labeling for all beef sold in America. We have a petition out there on our internet. You just go to www.demandusabeef.com, and already over 403,000 consumers and producers have signed a petition calling on Congress to write a country of origin labeling law so that all beef, pork, and even dairy products are labeled as to the origins of that product. And that's what has to be done. And we've hit a brick wall trying to get for several years Congress to reintroduce the legislation. They've shaken their boots because of the pressure applied by the multinational meat packers and the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. And so the entire meat lobby is against this effort that is obviously very good for consumers and very good for producers. So we've actually drafted a proposed legislation for reinstating country of origin labeling for all beef sold in U.S. commerce. And we're shopping that around right now to various congressional offices, trying to find someone with the courage and will to actually introduce it. But that's what has to be done. We must change the law to correct this terrible problem.
You know, you filed this amica brief in the New Mexico lawsuit, stating that the Meat Inspection Act should not have jurisdiction over advertising. It would seem to me the key to this, to winning this battle, would be to somehow convince consumers that they have to stand up for their right to know where the food comes from. And so they seem to be related there, the ability to advertise. And it seems like the federal government is trying to grab control over advertising. Am I wrong?
Well, and that is the problem, and I couldn't agree with you more. We need consumers to call their members of Congress and urge them to support their right to know precisely where their food was produced. And in the case of an animal that could be born and raised for years in a foreign country and subject not to the United States' more stringent production standards, but rather to the more relaxed standards that is obvious in developing countries. And so that has to happen. And only if that happens is Congress going to find the courage to stand up against this institution that has been locking in the benefits for the multinational packers. So I agree with that, and I think I missed the second part of your question.
Well, how are we going to do that? How are we going to advertise? How are we going to convince the public, the consuming public, that they should advocate for their own right to know where the food comes from? When so much money is being spent to prevent them from knowing where their food comes from.
Right. So the meatpackers' dollars are being spent right now to maintain the status quo because this is exactly what they want. So we have to overcome that inertia of going nowhere. And in order to do that, we have to recognize that the Federal Meat Inspection Act attempts to preempt labeling and marking and the packing and ingredients information that's required on a label. And so when that was passed, those expressly included labels and marketing were to be preempted or were to preempt state laws. And typically state laws are the entity that would enforce consumer issues like the Unfair Practices Act of New Mexico. And so you have a difference between labeling and a difference between advertising. So labeling is what the consumer physically sees on the package when they pick it up. That's the label. And that's what the Federal Meat Inspection Act is now preempting state laws from interfering with. But the Federal Meat Inspection Act is silent on advertising. So our position is that the Federal Meat Inspection Act says nothing about advertising, meaning that states are free to enforce their false advertising laws. But in this court case, in this particular case, the lower court had issued a decision stating that the Federal Meat Inspection Act not only preempts states who want to change the labels, but it preempts states who want to enforce their false advertising claims. And we believe that that is absolutely wrong, that the Federal Meat Inspection Act is silent on advertising. That means states and consumers in those states can continue to enforce false advertising even when the label approved by the USDA is misleading. And a state should be able to take action to correct that. But the court has overstepped and said, nope, the Federal Meat Inspection Act also preempt states' false advertising laws and claims, and therefore we view this to be a very bad legal decision, and that's why we filed this amicus brief to clarify that the lower court was simply wrong in trying to expand the scope of the Federal Meat Inspection Act far beyond what Congress intended. So we have two problems here. One, we now have a court case that could conceivably tie false advertising claims up under the purview of the Federal Meat Inspection Act. But then we still have this problem with the Federal Meat Inspection Act's implementation that is allowing the mislabeling of USA products. So we have a twofold problem, and we need consumers' help on both of them. Number one, consumers should continue to work to enforce their unfair advertising claims, false advertising claims, and they need to call their members of Congress so that we can change the regulatory regime that is currently allowing these the mislabeling of USA beef.
So it seems then that the entire Meat Inspection Act was designed and passed into law on behalf of the four big meat packers because it protects them. And it takes away power from the individual producers and consumers. So it gives all the power to those in the middle and takes away power and profit from those on eat other the ends of the food chain there. The producers, the farmers, and the ranchers are on horseback, and the consumers who are buying that package of steaks that say product of the USA, but in fact could be a product of anywhere in the world. So that's quite a fix to be in. There must be a way out of it. So when we come back, we'll attack that, how to get out of this situation. And I'd also like to address the subject of the unmarketing of beef, and which seems to be a significant issue in the beef industry as well as for us consumers who love a good steak. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, your host for this hour, with Bill Bullard, CEO of RCAF USA. How much truth is in the advertising of food? Right back.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
Northland Berry News, Paul Otten.
What a book. It's obvious MetroFarm was not written by someone sitting in an ivory tower. It comes from the trenches, from the School of Hard Knocks. A superb job.
Ag reporter Nancy Barr. MetroFarm addresses just about every issue involved in planning, planting, growing, harvesting, packaging, transporting, and marketing of a crop.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning MetroFarm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, those of us who consume beef and those of us who produce beef are seemingly victims or prisoners, actually, of those in the middle who process the beef. Four big meat packers control 85% of the nation's $66 billion beef industry. And that's in a pretty big chunk of the marketplace. So it's obvious that they became very big and very concentrated by the judicious expenditures of lobbying money in New York, in Washington, D.C., and they have the rules pretty well rigged in their favor. How do we get around this? You know, Bill Bullard, CEO of RCAF USA, I did a piece this past Saturday on how David Rockefeller, John D. Rockefeller, actually, invested in prohibition to eliminate all of the stills on America's farms throughout the heartland. That's how farmers got their energy, was by distilling their crop residue and turning it into alcohol and running their tractors and their cars and their trucks. But John D. Rockefeller figured out that by investing heavily in prohibition, he could get rid of all of those stills and end up being the monopolist in charge of all the petroleum. And it seems to me like beef, the entire beef industry, is under attack now by those who would like to unmarket beef, who would like to convince us not to eat beef. They blame beef just about on everything now, it seems, for animal cruelty, for global warming, for taking up too much space. It seems like they're trying to make beef into the new tobacco. And I'm wondering, who is it that wants to get rid of beef in the way that they're doing? Do you have any idea?
Well, you have to start at the global level. And at the global level, you have these global initiatives to try and control the food supply chain. And in the United States, for example, they would like to keep the cattle producer in a state of distress so that they can do what they've already done to the other major livestock sectors, including poultry and hogs. And in those sectors, they have completely captured the industry away from the independent producers, from egg to plate for poultry and from birth to plate for the hogs. So the cattle industry is the last frontier. It's the last industry, and it's the largest industry in U.S. agriculture. But it's an industry where the independent producers enjoy considerable liberty and freedom to continue producing cattle and caring for their land, air, and water in ways that are preserving the environment for generations to come. But they're being vilified right now by those who wish to capture from them the entire live cattle supply chain. And so that's why we're seeing this onslaught of demonizing cattle for contributing to climate change, regardless of the fact that the cattle are a substitute for the millions, tens of millions of bison and buffalo that used to roam the prairies. So the cattle actually are the solution, not the problem, but yet in order for them to fulfill their strategic goal of capturing the live cattle chain away from all of these pesky farmers and ranchers so that decisions could be made in the corporate boardrooms, we're seeing all kinds of attacks from every angle. And so the important thing, and when you run into that big of a problem, you have to have a solution to focus on. The solution is to restore competition within the free market system so that competitive forces decide who wins and who loses, not the multinational corporations or even government officials that are supporting these efforts to marginalize the role of the cattle producer in sustaining this environment and conserving our earth for generations to come.
Well, it would seem to me like a big part of the problem or a big part of the adverse publicity that the beef industry is facing can be laid right at the doormat of those big four producers who are responsible for most of the CAFO, the confined animal feeding operations that feed their packing plants. Am I wrong there?
Well, just as a real-life example, we used to have tens of thousands of independent, small, family-owned cattle feeding operations, and they'd feed upwards of 1,000 head of cattle, feed them a concentrated ration, and that's the good grain-fed beef that many consumers like. Well, over the years, in fact, not many years, in just the last couple decades, we've wiped out 75% of those independent cattle feeders. And the segment that we see tremendous growth right now is in the mega feedlots that are feeding over 50,000 head at a time. And that segment of the industry is growing, meaning the feedlot sector is likewise becoming highly concentrated. And as a result, all of these independent feeders that used to be scattered across the United States have now become concentrated in what's called the beef belt in south central United States. And they've moved in close proximity of the largest beef packers. And now you have that industrialized type agricultural setting right there in the heartland of America. So we've gone in the wrong direction, and we have to reverse that direction if we wish to accomplish the goals of rural communities across America who need some economic activity in order for them to survive and to prosper. They can't do that if you allow all of the industry to migrate right to the doorstep of the multinational meat packers and then do nothing to correct the competitive broken competitive structure of the market so that these independent producers can continue to themselves be prosperous.
It seems like much of the complaints coming against the beef industry are because of the global warming and the CAFOs themselves. People see the videos and whatnot taken at the confined animal feeding operations and say, oh my God, this is cruelty. This is terrible. This is absolutely disgusting. I'm going to go eat an Impossible Burger. And it seems like that's falling right into the hands of the fake meat industry, which is now a $2.6 billion a year industry. Small compared to the beef industry at large, but growing dramatically. Do you see that as a threat, the fake meat industry?
Certainly. And if you use the fact that you have the multinational meat packers seated on the board and controlling the largest cattle trade association in the United States, that's the National Cattle and Beef Association, they've essentially infiltrated that in order to pursue their policy objectives in Washington. Now take the fake meat issue. You have the same big four packers, several of them, are major investors in fake meat and the laboratory meat, I believe. And so they are the ones that producers rely on to pay them a competitive price for their cattle. And yet they're also their competitor because they're the ones that are producing this fake product as a substitute for the U.S. cattle producers, the beef derived from their cattle. And so you have this same deceptive and perverse organizations occurring that are working to the detriment of producers and consumers. It's a major problem, but again, you have to focus on a solution, and our number one focus is on the competitiveness of the market structure itself, so
how do we reintroduce competition into a marketplace that is essentially owned lock, stock, and barrel by those who essentially got rid of competition?
Right. So the pendulum has swung so far that the way to resolve this now is reduced to going back to Congress and having Congress pass legislation. So we know how the packers have gained an advantage in the marketplace, how they have diminished competition. They did it by shifting large volumes of cattle out of the competitive market and placing those cattle into what we call captive supplies. They're unpriced formula contracts that allow the packers to shun the cash market. So the solution to that problem is to restore the viability of the cash market, and that at this point in time will now require legislative action from Congress to force the packers to purchase at least half of their cattle from this competitive cash market, which is our industry's most important price discovery market. So that's how you restore the lost competition in the cattle market, is you significantly bolster the marketplace where competition originates. And then we have to have competition for beef in order to address packers mislabeling USA beef and substituting USA beef with this foreign product. And that's where country of origin labeling comes in. So of all the problems we talked about, our organization said we need to do triage. We need to focus on two things. First, we need mandatory country of origin labeling for all beef sold in America. Second, we need a bill passed to force the packers to increase the volume of cattle sold in our competitive marketplace. And we have legislation introduced. Senator Grassley from Iowa, a Republican, Senator John Tester from Montana, a Democrat, have introduced what we call the spot market protection bill and would immediately require those packers to purchase 50% of their cattle from the competitive marketplace. And that will immediately begin to restore competition. So this is triage. These are the first two and most important measures that must be undertaken: country of origin labeling for beef and require packers to purchase 50% of their needs from the competitive marketplace. Once that's done, then we can begin to work on all of these peripheral issues that have been harmful to the well-being of rural communities and cattle producers and consumers. So but we have to start someplace, and there's the most important place to start.
Well, it seems like there's two kinds of numbers here that need to be considered. One are the numbers of money that are being devoted to preventing this triage from happening. But the other number are the number of people who eat beef in the United States. And it would seem to be that you have pretty much no way of beating the money unless you can get those who consume beef to demand to know where the beef is coming from and to be able to demand the kind of beef that they want. So it seems like, to me, you know, you have to look for some allies here. And your allies are not going to be in Washington, D.C., unless you can figure out how to bring the consumers to bear on the congressmen. Because they're just going to, otherwise, they're just going to take the money. But you have to get the voters. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. So the first step in that process is you have to inform the consumers that they are being exploited. And you have to inform the consumers that they can't even go to the grocery store and buy beef from the country of their choosing to feed to their families. And once that awareness occurs, then we need to work closely with the consumers to force the change in Congress. And that's going to take consumers who are themselves banding together to demand that Congress provide them the right to know where their food comes from. And we, as the cattle industry that's been fighting this for 20 years, need to help the consumers in any way we can to accomplish that. And so that was the genesis of the petition that we did that attracted over 400,000 consumers. But that's just a small start. Consumers really need to begin picking up the phone on a regular basis and demanding that their members of Congress meet their needs, meet their need to know from what country the beef they're buying for their families was grown, born, raised, and harvested. And that is very important because the United States has the most stringent health and safety production standards in the world, bar none. We produce the highest quality beef, and we do it under the best of conditions. And yet our industry is being undermined with an influx of about 3 billion pounds of beef from foreign countries, and consumers are left in the dark. So we need somehow to reach out to the consumers and ask for their help in accomplishing this, because you're right, with 730,000 cattle producers left in the United States after our industry has been shrinking for decades, there's not enough of us left to do this on our own. We need the help of consumers.
And how do you reach consumers? I once had a farmer call from Arkansas. He said, "Michael, I grow the best watermelons in Arkansas, but I'm not making any money." I said, "Well, how do you sell them?" He said, "Well, a truck comes by, and I put them up on the truck with everybody else's watermelons." And I suggested to him that you grow the best watermelon in the state, and yet you throw it on truck with everybody else's watermelons. Your watermelons just became a commodity, not worth much more than anybody else's. So what you have to do is distinguish yourself from everybody else's watermelons. And it seems to me like that's what's happened to the beef industry. You've taken the best beef in the world, grown under the best conditions, under the strictest standards, and you're throwing it up on the truck with all the other beef that comes from anywhere in the world.
You're absolutely right. And that's why the first step in correcting the situation is to distinguish and differentiate the USA product from all other products. And that's where the fight is occurring. And until we do that, we're not able to even persuade consumers to seek out the USA-produced product in the marketplace because of the false labeling, the misleading labels that they're receiving. So we have to change the law. And very importantly, when the COVID pandemic struck, consumers for the first time in memory went to the grocery store and could not buy the beef they needed for their family. And so that caused us to set up an internet platform to try to connect cattle producers who could actually sell directly to consumers. And so we have hundreds of cattle producers from across the United States on that list that consumers could go to find out where to buy good beef. And so we're seeing now a resurgence in the desire to have more local processing plants so that cattle producers can sell directly to consumers. But the problem we have is our industry is so diverse. We have large ranches in the more arid part of the country. and they produce more cattle than they could sell in their local communities. So we have to raise the bar for everyone, and that would provide entrepreneurs and new developments to occur at the local level. But until we raise the bar and require all beef to be distinguished as to its where it was born, raised, and slaughtered, we're unable to accomplish the rest.
What about pointing to those big four and say and telling the consumers of the world, look what they have done to your food. We have a way to bring your food back to your table. Thank you, Bill, for joining me.
My pleasure. Thank you, Michael.
You bet.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.